Thank you all for coming out at this unreasonable hour of the morning. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the moderator of this panel. This is Why Professionalism Matters. This was a idea that I pitched to the panel committee because it's something that's extremely important to me. I am a writer. I write science fiction and horror. I'm in Ottawa. This is my ebook, Silverman's Game. If you have a smartphone, you can scan the QR codes. I also work for Cheesy Publications as the marketing director, so I work both sides of the publishing angle as a writer and as a publishing professional. I also have a day job, so my time, I am extremely disorganized and tired. But having worked both sides and working in the industry, going to conventions and meeting people, the importance of professionalism as a creative professional strikes me as extremely important because it does color how you're going to be viewed. And even if your work is superb, if you're not a professional, people are less likely to work with you because it's about time, it's about money, it's about effort. And you can sell a whole lot of books that are okay. And if that's easier than selling one or two books that are brilliant, but the author or the creative person is just a pain in the butt to work with, guess which way you're going to go. So with that introduction, I will ask each of the panelists to introduce themselves, explain what they do, full-time, part-time, et cetera. And also the title of the panel is Why Professionalism Matters, so it presupposes that it does. But if they disagree or have a different point of view, I'll ask them to say it, and then hopefully we can get into a discussion about why they think professionalism does or does not matter, and maybe some examples of professionalism or lack of professionalism, and how that colored their view as a creative people. So I'll set on the side.
Hi, I'm Adrienne Press, and I'm the author of two middle grade children's novels, Alex and the Ironic Gentleman, and Timothy and the Dragon's Gate. Some of you have heard this spiel before. I am also newly entering the YA realm in 2012. Which is why I really hope the Mayan guy just got a sore arm and just stopped writing, because he's like, that's like centuries from now, and he just stopped. Another world actually. Okay. It's called the Friday Society Steampunk YA, and I'm very excited about that. The question was whether I was full-time, like you had just a sort of full-time,
full-time part of.
I guess I'm a full-time actor and author combined, so I don't know if that makes me part-time both. I do once in a while have to augment my income doing fun receptionist gigs, because being a writer is being, you know, poor. Unless you're J.K. Rowling, which I secretly am. I particularly like this panel because, first of all, I agree that professionalism does matter, and I have seen it work in my favor quite recently. I'm not sure if we're entering into that part of the conversation.
We'll just move along.
So
it's plenty of fun.
There you go. That is who I am. I'm very professional.
Scott.
And I'm Scott Edelman, and I have seen many people crash and burn disastrously over the years, so this is a good panel to do, and I've seen it occur in many different planes, in that, on the one hand, my first convention was in 1970 as a fan, so I've been going to conventions for 41 years. So I've seen things from the fan side, and then I later became a professional writing comic books and writing science fiction as well. And then I've also seen things from the writer and the editor side, so there are multiple things going on. I've edited Science Fiction Age magazine for 8 years, and now I've been editing a site called Blaster for the Sci-Fi Channel, an online news site. And I've also interacted as a writer with editors. So all components, all different parts in the life cycle of science fiction, fandom, and professionalism have done horrible, disastrous things to each other and have done things well. So you know, I've seen it on all sides, so that's why this is a good topic to be talking about.
My name is Gregory Wilson. I'm an associate professor of English at St. John's University in New York City. That's my full-time, I guess, day job. And I'm also a writer. My first novel came out of almost 2 years ago now, called The Third Sign. And my next two are out on submission as we speak. I also am co-editing an anthology on speculative fiction and politics, which is with some of the authors here. And I also, my other hat is that I run a podcast with Brad Bollier, who just has a series out with Nightshade, starting with The Winds of Kalakovo that just came out. And the podcast is called Speculate. And so we've interviewed a number of authors, Kiz Johnson and James Patrick Kelly and Pat Rothfuss most recently, and N.K. Jemisin and Ali Dibadard and a bunch of other people. And so we're having fun with that. And the professionalism side, for me, yes, absolutely it matters. I think you're going to have a hard time finding someone who says, no, no, really. Amateurism all the way. Professionalism obviously matters. And in my case, since I was coming from a different background, I was coming from an academic background, I can tell you, having seen both in specifically fantasy and science fiction writing, but also in the academic realm, that in a lot of cases, your success rises and falls based upon how professional you are. And I've seen people, I'll tell one anecdote later, about someone who was really more qualified than me at my given point in my career, and I was in the same position largely because of his lack, and I think, my corresponding amount of professionalism in that regard. So yeah, it absolutely matters.
My name is Mandy Slater. I'm a part-time short story writer and journalist. I have some things in this lovely book called Zombie Apocalypse, which also Scott has some stories in. I'm also involved in the 2013 World Fantasy Convention. I have lots of props here. Taking place in Brighton, England. And my day job, I work in PR and marketing for Sony Ericsson.
So we all get one of those at the end.
You'll be getting smartphones at
Sweet.
The end.
My name's Howard Taylor. I write and illustrate a comic strip called Schlock Mercenary. I've been doing it for about 10 years, and it's a gig that currently fully supports me and the family of six. And had I not been consummately professional at the right times, in the right places, I would not have been successful as I am.
Okay. I think I'll sit with this side of the table and just say we've talked about professionalism matters, and I just want to get what everybody thinks and what their perception and definition of what professionalism is.
Okay. When I first started cartooning, I assumed a lot of things about the business. I assumed that cartoonists always worked ahead, cartoonists always made their deadlines, cartoonists always... But these were things that I assumed that the professional would do. I saw a lot of amateurs not doing that, and I said, oh, well, if a professional does this, how does the pro pull it off? And so I decided to act like that. This was 4 years before I went full-time, and that attitude, I have never missed a deadline on a daily strip over 11 years. It's a daily strip. That's 11 years times 365. That's how many comics I've drawn, and none of them have been late. And that's because I made the decision very, very early on to be professional. But that's just one aspect of professionalism. Part of what I think we're also talking about here is I gave a talk at Gen Con. The panel was called Getting Your Second Art Gig. And I spun it as, you are building a character, you're statting out a character, max minning for a role-playing game in which your heroic action depends on you being a fantastic, employed, creative professional. And I said, charisma is not a dump stat. You have to put points into it. You have to be able to talk to people. You have to be able to sell yourself. You have to be able to be nice. You have to be able, and this is the part where a lot of people fall flat, you have to be able to apologize when you're not wrong. Because these are the sorts of things that professionals do in order to maintain the business relationships that they need to maintain in order to keep getting paid. It's not about your pride, it's not about your ego, it's not about being a prima donna, it's about being a professional. And I kind of hold prima donna and professional on opposite poles of the battery there. Prima donna gets to be the negative pole.
I think professionalism is about a couple of things. I think it's about your ability to communicate, as you said earlier, and about being polite to people. And something I said on a panel yesterday with Matt, if you're serious about your careers, the people in this room, you will know for the next 20, 30, 40 years, and you will hang out with the same sort of people, even if you're just beginning in your career. These people will remember how you treat them, and you have to be very, very aware. And we all have very long memories, and we have very long memories because that way we can tell funny stories on panels when you behave inappropriately. And I don't mean to scare you, it's like in an all-encompassing way, but try to treat everybody equally. Try to treat everybody. You don't have to be best friends with everyone. You will make enemies, but we just tend to run away from our enemies. We don't tend, we only confront them bizarrely on in electronic forums, which is something I'd like to talk about later. And just realize that that you, this is now your family, your professional family and colleagues, and act appropriately.
Yeah, I think the acting appropriately part is the important thing there. The anecdote I promised. when I got my first job out of graduate school, I got a job at Boston University teaching, and I was there for about a year. And when I first got there, they had this thing where they introduce you as a new assistant professor, and the, you know, the chairman sort of explains what's going on. The chairperson goes, gets up and explains the deal with you and where you come from and your background and so forth, and everyone applauds, and then they move on to the next person. It's very nice. So they came to me, introduced me, thought it was wonderful, and then the next person that they introduced was another person they had hired in my department the same year. Now, this person was, first of all, about 15 years older than me, and had two edited publications from Duke, and had gotten his doctorate from Stanford, from Berkeley, sorry, and had been at Harvard as this, and I kind of had this, like, why? Why would you be, I mean, this is sort of an entry-level job that I had, because I was entry-level, you know, from the professor point of view. I didn't understand why this person would be in the same position that I was, much older and theoretically more qualified, at least from a research point of view. So the chairperson introduces him and goes through the whole business, and then he says, as she's about to go to the next person, he stops her and says, well, actually, here's the other, you know, five things, and proceeds to go on for another 2 minutes talking about other names of people he'd worked with and other books and other anthologies and other universities, while the chairperson is sitting there kind of, you know, looking foolish and probably feeling that way. And I said, I get it. You're a jackass. That's why. And it seems so simple on the face of it, because you're told in academics, and I think you're told in fantasy and science fiction, in writing in general, you get this impression that the people, that it's all about simply what you produce and the quality of your work, and it's just about that. It's not just about that. It's also about whether these people, whether it's the people in this room that you'll know for the next 20, 30 years, or whether it's people in a department, are going to be able to look at you across the table and deal with you for the next 20 or 30 years. And they don't like jackasses. And it was this, probably it may seem to you very obvious, but to me it was this revelation, like, oh, it's not just about my dissertation. Like, I'm a nicer guy than this person, and that makes a difference. And when I say nicer guy, it means I simply behaved sensibly. I listened. I tried to take, you know, the advice that people gave me and apply it to my everyday life. I didn't dismiss it or do the, you know, the blowfish thing where someone says something and I immediately, what? What are you talking about? And this person didn't do that. And his insecurity meant that his career had obviously been hampered. And the rest of that year kind of confirmed that initial impression. He was not professional. So it's not just about sort of personal behavior. Obviously, professionalism is more than that. But I think a lot of it does come down to being able to behave reasonably with other people. And that, I think, is this critical aspect of professionalism that gets overlooked. So.
I'll just throw in my two cents. I know as the moderator I'm supposed to shut up, but my view with professionalism is that if you're a writer, if you're a creative professional, when you're working on your art, your craft, whatever you want to call it, you can be as much of a prima donna or an egotist as you want. And let's face it, as a creative professional, there is a certain amount of ego that goes into it to think, I'm going to create something out of my head and people are going to want to read it, buy it, consume it. But when you get into another person, working with another person, whether they're, it's a friend of yours who's going to edit your short story, whether it's somebody who's going to help drive your paintings or your artwork to a store, all the way up to contract negotiations with agents, with publishers, with editors, and there's a lot of money on the line. For me, professionalism is respecting and appreciating the other person's time, effort, money, thought, enthusiasm, and never, ever, ever taking it for granted, because it is a quid pro quo. No matter how good your art is, the other person is also giving you something of extreme value, and respect that balance.
Well, one reason professionalism matters is often the not quite as talented yet professional creator will get the benefit of the wreckage that has been created by the perhaps more talented but unprofessional creator. And there's one example I wasn't even going to bring up until Howard started talking, and I remembered back to my comics days when I was on staff at Marvel Comics, and there was something, they actually called it the dreaded deadline doom that they even mentioned in the comics themselves, because every book was late. And, you know, they were having to throw in reprint issues because someone couldn't meet a deadline and things like that. And what eventually happened is that the editor finally had to tell the regular writers and artists of a book, look, if you can't hit the deadline, we're just going to go get someone else to write something out of sequence. We're going to have this fill-in issue, and it's going to just sit around. And the minute you're X days late, we're just throwing that one in. And if you want to see your plot arc messed up, that's what's going to happen. And I was on staff at the time as an assistant editor, and I got to write a ton of either backup stories where they basically told, look, instead of a 22-page issue this month, just do a 15. You can get ahead. We'll get someone else to do a 7-page backup story, and we'll get ahead that way. Or do a whole full issue. I got to write an issue of Master of Kung Fu because of that. You know, I shouldn't have been writing. I wrote an issue of Omega the Unknown, which is Steve Gerber's brilliant story arc, and he was basically told, you know, look, if you can't hand in the plot synopsis to the artist, we're going to get some people. And the editor at the time took me and another writer out to lunch, saying, okay, you two guys, you're writing the next two issues. You know, what do you want to do? And I got to do that. And Steve was a far, put a couple more fars in, better comic book writer than I was, but I got the opportunity because they knew that if we gave it to you, you were going to hand it in. And there were many other writers there who were hopefully better than competent, but were not quite as good as these folks who say, yeah, I'll hand it in, and then they're not answering the phone. We even had to send people to people's homes to, you know, knock on the door to say, are you really, you know, hello, you know, where's that book that has to go to the printer? And I worked on staff. John Verporten was the production manager, and I proofread, that was my day job, I proofread comic books. And there is the assistant editor, and I'm sitting there proofreading an issue, and he took it from me. And I said, John, I haven't read that issue yet. And he said, you'll read it when it comes out. You know? So the drive to hit the deadline, people would remember who was making the deadlines and who not. And, you know, sometimes geniuses can get away with these things, but in a regular deadline situation, they can't. And you only hurt yourself. And people remember when the opportunity comes up, it's like, boy, that artist is brilliant, but it'll take him 6 months to draw that issue. We can't do it. We got to give it to the other guy. So that's one reason. You get the dropping, yeah. The crumbs that fall.
I've been told it's kind of a three-legged stool, yeah. Where one of the legs is hitting your deadlines all the time. The other leg is you're just effing brilliant. Your work is the very, very best in this industry. And the third leg is, do people like working with you?
Yeah.
Okay. If any one of the legs of that stool is just so short it's missing, you might actually still be able to sit on it. It'll be a little wobbly. It's really hard to be the guy who always hits his deadlines and is absolutely effing brilliant. It's pretty easy to be nice and always hit your deadlines.
But if you are going to miss your deadlines...
Sorry. Sorry, we're going right down the line.
And yeah,
I know. Hold back.
But if you are going to miss your deadlines, for goodness sake, communicate that to your editor. Be honest. Do not hide. Say, look, you know what? Something's come up. I'm going to be a couple days late. Communicate. Do not be a hider.
Go, Adrian. Please.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm very interested. I think coming at the... Oh. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Glad it's not.
Yeah, I know. It's a good thing. I feel like everything has actually quite been covered, which happens when you're at the end of a lovely line of very intelligent people. But I do want to reiterate the reasonableness thing, and I twist it a little bit to what I call thoughtfulness, which is just stopping for just a moment and taking yourself out of a situation or looking at it from a broader picture, or just not being as fast and speedy and instant gratification as we all are. We're tweeting, we're panels, we're always doing something, and that frenetic pace can make you make decisions or say something to somebody or make a choice that, had you just taken one moment to step back and think, okay, how will that affect that, it would make the world of difference. I say the word thoughtfulness itself is a tricky word to say. You have to take a moment to actually get all the consonants out of your mouth, and I feel like that word is paramount in my mind. I also think, for your own self-preservation, I think none of us have been, you know, we're all saying, look, do it for yourself. You know, you want to be empathetic, you want to be nice to other people, and hopefully it's because you care about other people and you're nice to other people, but this is a very crazy business, and this is something, I've only been in it for 6 years, And I come from a family of teachers, so very stable. You know, once you're in the Toronto District School Board system, you are in. And you might know, any of you who are from this area, that you might have had some teachers who ought not to be still in, but they are. My parents, not so much. They were awesome. But I'm not used to the constant shuffling about. So my story that I sort of hinted at, why this particular panel really interests me, is I got an agent very quickly. I got a publishing deal very quickly. I was very, very lucky. And it, you know, I started to get to know people. I knew nobody. I did everything backwards. I went to cons after. I got to know other authors after. I was very lucky. And I happened to like people, so I happened to be personable, and I happened to like talking and also listening. And so I got to know lots of people. I got to know other people's agents and editors. And because I already had that, I was feeling very relaxed and comfortable, so I didn't feel a need to sort of, you know, I could just have back and forths. And in the back of my head, I was always sort of like, well, you know, I'm set, I've got my peeps, I'm good. But I'll still, you know, we'll still have a conversation. We can still hang out because we both are human beings, we like each other. And because I never actually indulge in the slight snobbery that perhaps my id was interested in, I saved myself, because last January, my agency, which was in the UK, they lost their children's book agent, and I had a property that was sort of, they wanted to get on right away, and they weren't sure when they were going to be replacing her, and so kind of sadly, and a little mutually, except I was like, anybody can represent me, it's okay. They dumped me. And it was sad, and they're lovely, and I actually don't feel any animosity towards them. But I panicked, of course, because suddenly you go from this agented author. I should talk about the editors I have gone through since getting my book deal. I had one editor buy my book, and then by the end it was a different editor working on it with me, you know? And just going through all these cycles, I'm like, I come from teachers. Why are people switching jobs? Why don't they just stay in the same place for 30 years? And so I was freaking out, but I had met many agents, and I had had lovely conversations and interactions with them, and I called up a friend in kind of a mild panic, because I knew her agent, we had met up, and I really liked her agent. So I said, hi, I was wondering, could you maybe give, and before I could finish the sentence, she's like, I'll call her. And she called the agent, meanwhile, the agent said to her, oh my gosh, I was wondering, you know, she's very nice, she wouldn't try to poach, but she was sort of in that, I was wondering if Adrian wanted to switch agents. And in 2 days, I had a new agent. And that was simply because of the relationship that I didn't think I was ever going to need to worry about this. I was like, I'm set for life because I got an agent once. And it made a huge difference. When I went to BEA last year as well, it all happened last year. BEA is the Book Expo of America in New York. It's a big trade convention for publishers and agents. It's not so much for authors, but sometimes the big names show up. I just walk around and collect free books. And I met yet another, a former editor of mine, because I went through 12, right, who is now an agent, who then said to me, if you ever need an agent, you know, by the way. So all these relationships I had made, not thinking I would ever, I was set for life, became suddenly just so sharply focused how much it mattered, my interactions with everybody, because you just don't know. The unpublished author, I've seen it. I've seen people who have just been published and then talking to somebody who isn't, and there's sort of a contemptuous kind of, oh yes, well you see, I'm published, little one. That unpublished author next year could have a six-figure deal with HarperCollins and next, and you might want a blurb from that person, you know?
Just because you're published doesn't make you a better person.
No, well, I mean, and that's in the end. I'm saying, if you're not empathetic or thoughtful or kind and reasonable, do it for your own self-preservation. Trust, just assume that everybody around you will somehow be somebody who could actually maybe be helpful. Do it because it's nice, too.
Well, that goes into the be careful how you treat the people on the way up, because you
yes.
never know who you'll meet on the way down.
Exactly.
And, you know, I went by that first convention I mentioned. I've been going to conventions since I was 15. I still have the first program book, and there were only about 500 people at it. And it has the names of all the people who were at that convention. And I went back a year ago and looked at that list. And I said, oh, look, that one became my boss, you know, in 5 years. And, oh, that one ended up writing for me 15 years later. And I ended up writing for this one 10 years later. And this one ended up, you know, so what Mandy was bringing up is very true. You don't want to spend the next 40 years at conventions dodging people or having to dodge people at cocktail parties because you said, oh, man, I really said something stupid and insulted that person, or this person's a jerk. I mean, I think if you have disagreements, you should try to make them like family disagreements, the way you tell your brother, oh, you know, you're a real idiot, you know. But, you know, try, I mean, in a loving way, you don't have to go there, you know, because that can happen. And there have been so many people. There was an example recently online, I forget the poor woman's name, who objected to a review that was one, it was going all around the internet, this poor woman yeah. Who you know, said, you must take this review down because I deserve more than 2 stars. And no, I reviewed it. And blah, blah. And it basically turned down to the whole internet piling on the poor woman, which she didn't deserve. It got quite out of hand, but her responses ended up just being, fuck you to everybody who would quote. But you know, you have to decide who you, what kind of person you want to be and how you want to react. It must not be comfortable to have to be that person and to live with that kind of anger. And you can either deal with it in sort of a, ha, you know, well, they didn't like it, and make a joke out of it, or you could just, you know, go crazy like a Tasmanian devil. And remember about social media, I guess since I brought that up, I want, you know, social media is read. Editor, if you get rejected by a particular editor, and you then go to your blog and say, you know, Editor X is a real idiot and doesn't know a work of genius, and so from, you tell your friends that, yeah. Where it can't be overheard, but then, editors read, agents read, other writers read. And so if you're going to go online and make yourself known as someone who isn't easy to get along with, because that's what other people are saying too, the editor looking for a relationship with a writer isn't just looking for that book. She's thinking, he's thinking, okay, how well will this editor work with my revision letter? How well will this editor work with any kind of direction? It's a marriage. And do I want to work with someone who's going to make my life hell? Life is too short. You know, or do I want to work with someone who will be a pleasant experience in some way? So you have to weigh all that stuff.
And well, to touch on your point about the comments and the author was fighting back, let's think about professionalism. What, you know, from a dictionary term, you're a professional, you're paid to do a certain amount of work. As a writer, you are paid, hopefully, to produce a body of work, and then the critic's job, and they're paid, is to critique it. Novel published, critique written, done. Done. It is not the author's job, the author is not paid to go out there and comment and stir things up. So, you know, even to bring it back to a dictionary definition, relationships and all that notwithstanding, why would someone spend that amount of time when they're probably extremely busy and behind on their deadlines anyway doing that? It's a stupid waste of time. You're a professional, you're paid to write, read the reviews, and move on.
Well, my agent actually, and sorry, I've been very, very brief because I know I'm done. My agent, my former agent, told me a story that she was going to ask, I'm not sure if offer a deal or just ask for a full on a manuscript, but she did the Google, and this guy was basically just bitching about their agency, and she was like, no, never mind, I don't need it that badly. And so this gentleman lost out completely.
Well, and even whining about the agency is or an editor, you know, that's obviously over the top and just stupid and career suicide and don't do it. I have since realized that I don't have the luxury anymore of being an asshat on the internet to anybody.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, even if they're just very, very clearly wrong, what I do is I read the thing that's wrong, I think about writing the thing that I want to write, and then I don't write it. And for doing it, I get 1,000 points. Okay? If I actually write it, I lose 1,000,000 points. And I keep score, and I just try and make sure that I'm always in the positive every day. And that means I would have to write, like, 1,000, or not write 1,000 things that I thought about writing to balance out one horrible thing I actually do write. I moderate a couple of forums that are, you know, my own fans, and sometimes they will get hot-headed with each other. And I will wade in there, and I have to come out and say, all right, you, you're making personal attacks. Cut it out.
Yeah.
You, I hate to break this to you, but you're wrong. The facts have been stated to you, and you're ignoring them, and you're starting to devolve into the same ad hominem that's being used against you. Both of you, please cut it out. I'm trying to be nice. That's as far as I'll go into the asshattery. And even then, I feel a little guilty for having done it.
I think also what authors will sometimes do is will react to what they view and what may actually be unprofessionalism on the part of, you know, a particular agent or editor or, you know, as they see it, right? And then we'll respond in kind. And there's two problems with that. The first problem is the sort of classic grade school, you know, two wrongs don't make a right thing, right? If you're going to do the exact same thing they just did, it's not going to give you some kind of moral high ground. The second and more important reason is that you're establishing yourself as someone who will not be able to, you know, suffer the slings and arrows, right? You're not someone who's going to be able to get through moments of what will be, then there will be moments when you will get criticism that you will view as being unfair, and may be unfair. You cannot react in that way as if it is unfair openly. You know, the internet is permanent. It's bizarre that people don't know this. But the internet is permanent and public, and people will know about it, and it is not just going to be kept to only you or your, you know, close circle of friends. It's going to be something where everyone is aware of it. So you can't react in kind, even, as Howard says, you feel as if, you know, you have been treated unjustly. The other thing I wanted to mention, going back to something that Adrian said, which I think is important, is the I strongly agree with the sort of idea that you're listening to other people and having, you know, enjoying your relationships with them separate from what they can do for you. And I think that's really the key. It's not simply that you go around from person to person, make these connections with an eye towards, just in case, I have my safety net backup plan, you know, that's going to come through as such, right? It actually requires you to be genuinely interested to a degree in what it is that they have to say, to go into a conversation assuming you may learn something that's important to learn, you know, and not assume that the person has X level of expertise relative to you, and therefore, I mean, I don't know why people would think this anyway. This stuff blows my mind, why people would act this way, but whatever. But beyond that, I mean, you know, think about the sort of long-term effects of what it's like just to listen to someone, to listen to them. That's when these connections will actually occur. I'm a member of the Writers' Symposium at Gen Con. I've been now going to about four or five of these conventions regularly. And this is before I had my book published and before I had sort of any experience other than in sort of the academic side. And one of the ways that I was able to do that is that I came across well. I showed up to panels that I was placed on time. I was very, you know, grateful for the experienced people, more experienced than me, from which I could learn things. I didn't sort of get this little, you know, the people who have kind of an edge to them, you get the feeling that they're already angry about something and they don't conceal it very well. You know what I mean? If you feel that way, it means no. You know what I mean? Like you have this sense that they seem prickly to you. And I think those are the people who are not able to sort of they're not able to put away their own feelings in these matters, and they're just sort of going around looking for a fight, almost. That's very dangerous, and it's dangerous to hang around people like that, and it's certainly dangerous to be someone like that. So one of the things I think you need to do is go into these conversations with editors, agents, authors, even people who are not these things yet but are aspiring to be, and really try to listen to what they're telling you for what they're telling you, not because of what they could theoretically do for you 2, 5, 10 years down the line.
And sadly, I know we're all incredibly lovely in this room and on this panel.
Absolutely.
But there are some nutcases
brilliant.
Out there. And brilliant and talented and good-looking and everything
everyone
else.
Out there.
But there are some nutcases out there, and you just need to know who to avoid and who not to have the confrontations with. But as much as I'd like to agree with Howard in some of the things he says, he's obviously a much nicer person than I am. I think once in a while, depending on, you know, how famous you get and how well you're known, sometimes you do actually have to say to people, especially in the electronic community, where, as we've said already, for some reason people don't quite understand that everybody reads everything and everybody sends everything across by email, that if someone has said something libelous about you or completely inaccurate, you know, I think once in a while you do have to call them out, you know, and just say, excuse me, but what you've said is incredibly incorrect. You know, why are you saying that? And 9 times out of 10, if you send them a gentle email saying, excuse me, but they'll pull it down or you'll get a groveling apology or something.
The cease and desist when somebody's using your work and they shouldn't be. There are cases where professionalism dictates
that you have to say
something. In order to protect your career, you have to do something.
I think also it comes down to making a conscious choice, because we can say professionalism and we went down the line what it means to us. And I think that's a pretty key thing, because professionalism, even though there are sort of, I think, a basic foundation of it, you decide who you are as your professional self. What I mean is there's actually been quite a furor on the Twitter about hashtag YA Mafia. I'm not sure if anybody heard about this, because I'm not sure how many people are in the YA scene. Yes, look it up. Basically, it started with a couple YA authors explaining that, look, if you're an aspiring YA author, it does not necessarily bode well to also be a YA book reviewer and totally trash other YA books. And then other people came on and said, well, does this mean, okay, so I'm not allowed to speak my feelings then, because this YA mafia out there is going to judge me and say, well, you were mean to Melissa Marr, and if you're mean to Melissa Marr, therefore we're never publishing you. Is that what that means? And what it actually means is very, again, logical and thoughtful. It's twofold. One is, if you're going to review something, don't just bash it. You know, we talk about thoughtful reviews and actually analytical and analyzing it and not, well, I don't like this stuff, so it's no good. Not that kind of reviewing. But it also comes down to what you want and judging consequences of your actions. So if you even write something a tiny bit negative about something, somebody out there in the magical internet universe is going to take that so personally offensively to themselves. They will hate you and write horrible things, even if it was just a tiny little thing. Somebody out there is going to take it really, really badly. And that's okay, because that person is probably a little nutty. But you have to decide, does reviewing books, I want to be an author and I also want to be a reviewer, am I willing to put up with the occasional consequence of maybe I've reviewed a book by someone who is a very sensitive author, who will hold a grudge and might tell one of their friends? Likely it won't spread because there is no YA mafia, but you might have lost one connection there with somebody you never even knew. Am I willing to sacrifice that because I care passionately about reviewing books and there's the bad with the good? Or is reviewing books something I kind of like doing, but what I really care mostly about is, like, I want to be the author, and if that could happen, you know what? No, I'm not really in the mood to have other authors dislike me since I'm not so into reviewing. And both are okay. It's okay to want to be the YA author who also reviews and has a couple enemies, or just being the YA author who doesn't review and doesn't have to put up with that. But you have to make the choice, and then once you've made that choice, deal with the consequences and know how to deal with them professionally. So if there is backlash, don't react, and deal with that
in that friend. Aprilyn Pike.
Yeah, Aprilyn, yeah.
Aprilyn Pike, wonderful, wonderful YA author. She was in town, and she and her husband Kenny totally cleaned my clock at Agricola. But while we were playing board games, she was talking a little bit about the YA mafia stuff, and mostly it was her face-palming and saying, I really wish my friends, these authors, would stop doing this. Yeah. Because, you know, there's this sense that a rising tide lifts all boats. You know, that if we all talk about each other's books, then we'll all sell better and we all have a responsibility to do this. And that's a neat attitude, but not everybody is on that same boat. There are people who want to be book critics and want to earnestly criticize books. And Aprilyn finally said, you know, I'm just going to pass along the stuff I like. And I thought, oh, that's when people ask me to review books. Okay, I've got 40,000 daily readers on my website. If I post something on the blog, a lot of people are going to see it. Unless something is just truly awful and I feel the public needs to be warned away from it. like a restaurant that made me sick, or I won't write the negative stuff, because what my fans want to read is, hey, Howard, do you have a book recommendation for me? Well, yes, I do. I'm reading Wise Man's Fear right now, and I'm loving it. You know, I read Brandon Sanderson's Way of Kings, and I loved it. I went and saw this movie, and I loved it, but I don't think you'll love it because I loved it for these reasons. And that's the approach I try to take, because I don't want to be a critic. I recognize that criticism is its own thing. I'm not a critic. I'm telling people how much fun I had. because that's a lot more fun for them.
I have to say, I've done theater criticism for some time, which, and this gets around this problem, because that way I'm not reviewing things that I actually do, so I'm separate. The thing that I think is very important, and this ties into professionalism, is my name is on the review. And that means that I don't go around and do hatchet jobs. I don't go around and try to destroy people's careers. I respond to the quality of the show as I see it, and I try to honestly represent that. It's the same thing I do in the read and critiques we do at Gen Con and things like that. It's not a matter of destruction. It's a matter of, if possible, constructive criticism, because I do think that criticism has a significant and important and positive role to play. My objection comes to the anonymous, to the, and I have to say it, even the biggest sites do this, the anonymous sort of, you know, clearly the person hasn't read the book or doesn't know anything about it and gets $25 to go, this is a piece of garbage. And I find that kind of nastiness to be unprofessional in the extreme. The difference in what Howard's talking about is Howard is the one saying it. So first of all, he's not going to come out, presumably, and say, this is garbage, unless he's willing to back up that this is garbage. And most of the time, he won't do that because he doesn't want the hassle.
I reviewed Blood Rain, you know, the movie.
That's fine.
That's all.
Right, exactly. So I think the point is that there, it's a matter of sort of, I think you said, Mandy, being honest. And I think that's really the key. And part of honesty is your name has to be associated with it. And if you're not willing to put your name to it because you think it's not going to come out right, then don't write it.
And this is a very difficult field to do that in because we all know each other.
Right.
I mean, we're reviewing small books field of people that we know. And once you decide you're going to be a reviewer, I mean, I remember... Aldous Bridges would do the book review column in Fantasy and Science Fiction, and when he had to say that Stranger in a Strange Land, it was a horrible, wonderful first half of the book and a terrible last half. It was almost the greatest science fiction novel ever written, and then the last half it falls apart. Well, what do you do when this is a guy you hang around with at the convention, you know, when you're doing things like that? And there's a difficult choice that has to be made, and a lot of people who are talented backed away from it simply because, well, I know this guy, and I know I'll be more positive than he deserves, or I hate this guy, and
right.
I know I'll be more negative than he deserves.
Right.
So they just say, well, forget it, I'm not going to bother with it at all.
Thank you for putting your hand up, because I did want to say to the panel, it's a quarter to noon, so
oh,
I did want to
wow.
did want to say to the floor that we've been talking a lot, if there's anything that you'd like to ask or comment on, so starting right here.
Actually, you're gonna. If somebody is, the question. The question was the difference between can you say this is a bad book, sort of like on high, like a quantifiable, or whether I think this isn't. I think for reasonable people, it might make a bit of a difference. But the chances are, the people who react viscerally to a review and it will affect them aren't inherently reasonable.
Yeah.
And so they won't. The I think really won't make. I personally don't think. I think probably won't make that big a difference for the person, that person.
When I say I didn't enjoy something, that's different than me saying this was awful. I didn't enjoy it because these sorts of things don't resonate well with me,
right.
And this part just sort of fell flat for me.
Right.
When somebody who wants to defend the project, and when I do movie reviews, there's often people who are very passionate about, you know, film. When they come in and say, well, you're wrong here, this was an awesome film because of this and this and this, I can sit back and let the rest of my fans say, did you even read what Howard wrote? He didn't say it was bad, he just said he didn't have fun.
I think there are times you have to say that something is bad, and it all depends the relationship between the book and the person. Now, let's say my wife hates blueberries. You could make the world's greatest blueberry muffin, and she would say, could you please pick the blueberries out and just give me the nice muffin. So if she were going to tell you if that was a good muffin or not, you know, that's where, well, I didn't like this thing, and I don't like that. But if you made her an apple pie, and she loves apple pie, and it was a crappy apple pie, she would be qualified to say, you know, this has not reached the level of apple pie-ness. And so when you're approaching a book, like, let's say someone hates military science fiction, and they look at it and they say, you know, I know there are qualities in here that are supposed to be good. I just don't see it. I didn't like it. So that's A, in my opinion. But if there's another kind of book that they normally would like that kind of book and don't like this one, then they have to get into, well, something's not clicking with the book as opposed to something not clicking with me.
And I also think a little bit, because I have to disagree. I review films. I don't review books. Well, I do a little bit. But I'm sort of, I know a lot of us want to put I think before lots of things these days because we get so nervous because of this, the way the internet is. I'm sort of assuming that when somebody's writing something from their perspective, it is an I think. The whole article is I
think. It's just their opinion.
And the more you actually get reviewed yourself, the more you realize, oh my gosh, that really just is a person's opinion. I don't like to write I think because I feel like it's, I want to write sort of a professionally structured review where sometimes my voice is in it, but mostly it's sort of a little bit more objective than that. I'm trying to be, like what you were saying, where if there's a movie I see and I'm so not into that kind of movie, but I can still see the merit, so I'd still give it 3 stars even though I myself would never watch it again. I would still give it, like, you know, this professional, sort of slightly detached review. But again, I think that is a personality.
And that's not the sort of review I'm writing. You're doing very professional reviews, and I'm doing, you know, Howard wanted to eat popcorn in a dark room.
Yeah.
But the best, I want to go shut down, because I think we're getting
away from the topic.
So I think we had here, and then here, and then there. So moving from my right to left.
Okay, actually, just kind of, I think that some of the things we say about reviews actually do tie into the topic very well because it comes back to a key element of professionalism being civil to the people that you're dealing with. Howard did a review of a film called Legion.
Loved it, right? Loved it.
Very civil. Your discussion of a movie that seemed like a pretty...
Okay, my wife's name is Sandra. The two characters, who the whiny husband and the bitchy wife who end up betraying the party, were Howard and Sandra. And I came right out and said, listen, you want me to tear you a new one because you did this, so here it comes. And it was a humor piece.
But you were very simple about it, and had you just been like, this sucks, that wouldn't have had the same impact as the fact that you were patient and civil.
Admitted a personal connection.
Well, it's funny how you're talking about being civil and polite to people. One of the things I wanted to very briefly touch on was not just how you communicate in the electronic community and in public, but how you present, like, basically the way you dress at conventions and the way you dress at business meetings. And you may, and everyone here, you know, we're all sort of into that sort of smart casual mode, which is perfectly acceptable at conventions. You don't need to wear 3-piece suits, don't worry. But there's an aspiring writer in the UK who we literally had to pull aside at one point very politely and say to her, we do not think the way you are dressing is very professional. If you are serious about your career, serious about attending conventions, basically dressing like a slut just isn't going to work for you as a 50-year-old woman. And we obviously did not say it that way. It was an incredibly delicate situation. But we wanted to help her and her career. And we just said, you know, basically don't wear these big bustiers. It just dress the way everybody else is dressing. If everybody else is dressing in bustiers, then
it's
bustier go for time. It.
Well, it's also a question of respect. Like, this is a holdover from academic days. Like, I like vests, but I usually wear shirts and ties and the pocket watch and the vest at conventions. Why? Because I like it, but also because it feels professional to me. And I don't walk around with, you know, a ratty, you know, ripped T-shirt and shorts, you know, if I'm going to be a panelist.
That's part of
things.
Your professional image.
Yes.
Right. That's exactly.
That's recognizable.
Exactly. And by the way, it comes from my beginning days of teaching in a classroom, where if I walk in like this the first day of class, and this is the way that I dress, and I do, it is amazing the authority that is established immediately without having to say anything. I don't have to be an ogre. I act in a certain way because I expect my students to act in a certain way, and I'm very pleasant, and we have very discussion-oriented things, and I tend to be relaxed in my teaching style, but this makes a big difference to them because they recognize that I'm not just another student. I'm a professor teaching them, and I think in sort of the, as you say, this is kind of the professional image that you present. Now, that does not mean that, you know, walking, because I also like to go to conventions where I just have fun and play board games and everything like that, and God knows I don't wear this in those kind of circumstances, but it's a little bit about the way that you present yourself, and I think a reasonable way to present yourself rather than ratty, you know, or the bustiers and all this kind of stuff, that's not a difficult line to cross.
I think the choice thing and what you're talking about is so important, and it comes back to individuality, like, you know, don't take notes and go, this I have to do and this I have to do. We all have what we need to do. I write children's books. I also have a young adult, which is a little edgier. But And my blog that I have is meant for people who are interested in becoming writers, because I find that interesting. And so it's for adults. But I am aware that children will be Googling me, will be looking me up. I do not discuss sex.
Yeah.
I do not use any bad language, even though I might use a little bit, actually, in my YA. I don't do any of that, even though I happily chat about sex and use foul language whenever. But it is a public persona I chose because I knew what my audience would be doing. It's the same thing with Twitter. In fact, I have to say, being a children's book author is a great way to keep things professional because you always have to check yourself. They're like, can I share this YouTube link? It's really cute, but the cat says the F word.
I think that's a really good point. I do want to move on. We had two more questions before we wrap up.
You get your agent to do that for you. You shouldn't have to deal with it.
Okay. If you don't have
unagented.
I also want to get your question so that if we can do a twofer, because we've got about 5 minutes left. So.
Well, this is more dealing with social media.
Okay.
Like, for example, Facebook. A lot of artists and writers don't necessarily have fan pages, mm-hmm. so that, they will often accept people they don't know as friends,
yeah.
Which. It's been, I think, because social media has been changing so quickly, it's a learning curve for everybody to exactly mm-hmm. approach people a certain way and how they want to be approached. I've learned, and it's, you know, I've made some mistakes along the way, but what I've started doing was I would ask, let's say, a professional that I've never met, I'll send them a private message, you know, is it okay if I do this? Is it okay if I ask you about this, or, you know, I'm trying to be very understanding of their time. So I'm just kind of curious to know how you deal with somebody that you've never met on a potentially a place where it is somewhat private.
Okay. Two questions on the floor. Panel, go.
I think Facebook is so tricky because the whole fan page thing is more recent to the Facebook. What I just wound up doing personally, so I'm sure everybody has their own, is I just started accepting almost everybody, except for if there are guys, when I look at their page and all they have are half-naked girls as their friends, I'm like, no, we're not going to accept you as a friend. And just realizing, again, that I don't actually have a private sphere on the internet. My Facebook is not private. I share slightly more personal Adrian-related things. I do have a fan page where I just post all the professional stuff. But anything I share is something that I don't mind the whole world knowing. And that's, I feel like, the only way you can. Even in, I know somebody who shared something on a very private, locked, because you can do that, I think, with some mm-hmm. blogs. Not, I'm a blogger, so you can't, but it's very private, and not even that bad, you know, but just a very private thing. And somehow, even though all her, her closest friends were on it.
Copy and paste.
You know, I'm stunned by the number of my friends who are Facebook promiscuous, because I get these requests. And if it's someone, even if I don't know them, if I can see they're a professional in the field, or they're even just a fan, and I see, oh, they're involved in science fiction, you know, then they Google the name and see, oh, they've posted reviews on Amazon, okay, that's a real person. Every once in a while, I've gotten at least a dozen of these. It's an obvious porn bot of some kind. And, you know, it's a half-naked woman. The only message on the wall post is, you know, come see my pictures on this link. And I say, wait a second, I have 84 mutual friends with this person? And I'll email these people and I'll say, some of them, I say, how did you friend this person? And some of them have said, well, I just friend anybody who asked.
They made some science fiction reference.
Yeah.
Star Wars. Like, oh, it must be okay.
But, you know, there are a lot of people there who just do anybody. I only let people in who I feel are part of the community, or part of the sort of the tribe.
To the other question here, I mean, with regard to Facebook, you're not going to find standardization because Facebook has changed enough times without bothering to check with their users what they want, that you're going to see a wide range of professional behavior and unprofessional behavior, and I don't think you're going to get a standard answer from us.
Which means it's what you're doing, if that's the decision.
What you're doing is going to work.
It never hurts to err on the side of polite.
So we're still
but the question over here, find a friend, find a fellow professional who has had to write that letter and use that as boilerplate. What? Unless you've written legal stuff yourself, it's way too easy to get the tone and the tenor wrong. Look for examples of that. But by all means, you know, send them, look at the contract and make sure the contract says, okay, I have to deliver notice. Usually you have to deliver notice that you are going to make the statement. Deliver the notice and then deliver the statement and do it all above board.
I mean, what genre? I'm assuming it's genre since we're here, but are you science fiction fan? Like, what is it? Because there are
I was going to say is join SFWA or join HWA, because all of the writer unions organizations all have a lawyer on staff who will advise you.
And also do search social media. If you're the only one, clerical error. But if not, probably not. There's probably a lot of other people out there. So there might be class action. There might be other authors who are getting together who already have a lawyer that you can join in.
You can look at the Beware and Background Check forum on Absolute Right. Sometimes they'll have threads there that are posted that may discuss your publisher, and you can do a search to see if your specific publisher is listed.
Do you know that website? It's called Absolute Right.
Yeah.
And write as in writing, so WRITE.
Yeah, if you Google it, it'll come up first, I think. Yeah.
And it's got forums, and what he's talking about is there's a section, like it's a massive forum, we're both members. It's a massive forum, and there is a section where you can research publishers and agents, and sometimes they're very positive because they're cool, and sometimes they've got a massive thread of like 24 pages where people are discussing fraud, and you can learn a lot about what's going on there.
And what I want to point out, just kind of go meta a bit, take a step back, is you didn't name your publisher, and nobody here asked you to name your publisher, because that's a shot, and that's a sign of professionalism. It would have been very easy to say, my publisher, I'll name mine, Cheesy Publications, hasn't paid me in 6 months. You didn't name names, because it could be a clerical error, and they may, well, we're so sorry, here's the thing. But I just want to recognize that as a good example.
Good job.
But it doesn't mean you can't name the person in the bar.
Because we're all like, who is it?
So with that, thank you all for coming. Let's have a hand for Doug Smith, who just joined us here. Thank you to the panel, and thank you for coming. So,
thanks, sir.
Have a good rest of your day.
Nice to meet you.
Good panel.
Oh, me too.